This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We've got Will Disley with us here. Will, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excited for another opportunity to play football.
I got to say, I was pumped to see you on the field, knowing everything that you've gone through to recover. I couldn't compare to how it felt for you to be back on the field. That had to be a really awesome moment.
Yeah, I tried to kind of try to suppress those feelings, you know, at least for game time. But then after stepping away, talking with, you know, my strength coach and athletic trainer, just kind of, you know, it's almost like, man, we really did this thing, 10 some change. So, you know, it was a grind to get back. And, you know, I just have to give a lot of thanks to my family and obviously the Seahawks organization for helping me. And it wasn't fun, wasn't easy, but it's definitely worth it, and I love playing this game. So it was awesome to go put the helmet on one more time.
Let's go back to the game you got hurt. First of all, I want to know, was Chandler Jones just cursing you up and down in that game? Because you were owning him.
We'll see what the fourth quarter has to say in that one. But we were off to a good start. I was happy we got the win. You know, Seabass had a big kick to end that game. So that was pretty much my only emotion, was like, man, let's go win this game. And as soon as I went down, I was like just trying to let everyone know that that was what I cared about, and, you know, try and go win this one.
Did you know what happened to you when you get hurt, or was it you just knew you blew your knee out?
But Yeah, I got caught that flat route and just turned up and kind of went down and rolled around. I felt a pop, and I was like, ah, that's not going to be good. And I looked at my knee, and the kneecap was not where it's supposed to be. So definitely was like a little bit of a shock, but it's pretty amazing. Your body, you know, kind of just, you know, does what it does, and, you know, a couple deep breaths, and I was able to kind of relax and kind of just let that pain subside for a little bit. But just kind of just frustrated and anger, like, man, I was, you know, because we were doing so well, and, you know, the team was coming along, starting to put together, you know, a little bit of a win streak, and was just so excited to, you know, be a part of it. And, you know, was just happy that they've had a great year, and it was fun to kind of come back and, you know, be rehabbing alongside those wins and get to the playoffs. So
what was the hardest thing that you had to do in rehab? The hardest part of that?
I'd probably say probably getting the range of motion back was probably the most difficult. I think anyone who has had surgery probably knows that's, you know, you have to break up scar tissue, and that doesn't feel good. But, I mean, you pretty much grow up lifting weights if you play football. So, you know, getting the strength back, although it wasn't fun, it was just, you know, it was just normal business, going to work 5 days a week, just, you know, building leg strength. So, but, you know, a month in January, because I had to be in a straight leg brace for 6 weeks, so all that scar tissue really hardened, and it was like, all right, time to start cranking on it. And so there was days where I was like, man, I do not want to go in and get this thing cranked on right now. But,
that part's medieval.
Yeah,
isn't it? I mean, you basically lay down and they just crank your knee. I mean,
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, that's like strict. I was like, I don't think it's going to go any further. And he's like, you got a little bit more. You got a little, and you know, you have to get to the equal distance of your other knee. And so he wouldn't stop till we had it. But, you know, I have to thank him for that, because I would have said, no, let's cut it. You know, this is not fun. This hurts. But it was important, and, you know, I'm really thankful that it worked out.
I've got a question. Can you clarify what it means to crank on it?
Well, I basically
take your foot and try and put it as close to your butt.
Your heel to your butt.
And then, like, Obviously it doesn't want to go there, and so he kind of pushes your heel to your butt. Like, you're sitting on a bed or whatever, and you're putting your heel all the way to your butt, flexing your knee and trying to get all that range of motion.
Sounds horrible.
Or you lay on your stomach, right?
Yeah. And so then all this scar tissue, like, it's pretty crazy. Like, there was a point where I could, like, lay with my leg up, and it would just be, like, stuck, like, just hanging, because the scar tissue wouldn't let it go any further. But now I can, you know, get it back all the way to my butt. So
that's nuts.
Adam Jude, Seattle Times, wrote a nice story about your rehab, and it sounds like how important was your family in this whole process? Because it sounds like the first couple months you were in Bozeman.
Yeah. I mean, my family's everything to me, really. Like, I mean, no matter what I'd be doing, they'll always support me and love me. And I think, and just knowing that gives me a ton of confidence and just joy in life, knowing that they'll always have my back. But yeah, it was really awesome. The same day I had surgery, my nephew was born, Malcolm. And so I was like, hey, you know, I'm not really doing anything. I'm going to be in a straight leg brace for 6 weeks. Can I go and spend time with my family? And they were like, yeah, it's okay. Just make sure you're getting rehab. And I have a good relationship with a PT down there. And so we just got to work. But, you know, spending Thanksgiving, spending Christmas, and spending time with my nephew and also my three-year-old niece, it's just you can't get that time, you know, especially in this business. You're pretty much working 24/7 for 6 months or whatever. And so just really thankful. I hadn't spent a Thanksgiving with my family in over 5 years, I think, since high school. So you really take that for granted, all those holidays and that time with family. And I think it promotes healing, you know, love and laughter. And just all they did for me was unbelievable.
What was the best part about Thanksgiving? Was it what happened on Friday in Pullman?
Yeah, always. I mean, you can look forward to that every year. You know, the dogs beating up on the Cougs.
It's great. It was a fantastic
moment.
Yeah,
and the snow, that was a fun one.
Yeah. He thinks that if it hadn't snowed.
You had to bring it up. He's just.
Oh, yeah. He spent the entire lead up to it explaining how it was going to be different this year. And since it's happened, he's spent the time explaining how snow was the deciding factor and if it hadn't snowed.
Can I point out that I did not bring this up? I did not bring this up.
I didn't bring it up either. Didn't bring it up either.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed watching the game, though.
Yeah. Yeah. For the past couple of years. Really?
You're glad he...
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just being nice because he's our guest.
We've got Will Disley here with us. You had a tweet after the injury where you said, "I'm built for this." And, look, I've been a fan of yours and really enjoyed watching you play going back to the University of Washington. When you expressed that, I was thinking about how much sort of maturity it would have to be to, in the midst of having this injury that had sort of short-circuited what was this really promising rookie season, to be able to see that injury as part of your journey, not just a setback, but, hey, this is something that happens in this game and something that I'm going to have to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any story is perfect. I mean, you can look at my college career. I mean, we played D-line, played as a true freshman, didn't play sophomore year, switched positions, and then you know, just kind of just rolled. And I think, you know, what I meant by that is just having that mindset of, you know, the next day, whatever is going to come, I'm going to try and do the best I can at it. And I think that's something that I learned at UW from Coach Peterson, is just the next day I'm going to do my best, and that's the standard. And then the next day we're going to try and do better than that. And so, you know, when I went down, it was like, gosh, but you can't undo what happened, right? Everyone wishes, I wish I could undo that, but when you get hurt, you can't go and undo that. It already happened. So the next thing is just, what can I do tomorrow? When can we have surgery? When can I start planning my rehab? Just attacking the days and stack them. And that's kind of what I meant. And I think, you know, that's a really a credit to what I've learned and cultivated over at UW through Coach Saha and Peterson and Pow Pow. And even here, it's just competing to have the best day possible and just keep stacking days.
Do you feel like you're as good as new? As good as you were before the injury, or are there some things where you're still working on to get back to that?
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you brought that up. I actually feel really good. I don't know if I'm good as new. I mean, we're 15 practices into fall camp, so. But I definitely think it was kind of nice to kind of take a look at my body and be like, hey, this is where we need to improve. Obviously, the knee needed to grow and get strong, but like, I can spend some time on my upper body. I can spend some time on my cardio and my core. And kind of the process building up to camp, I mean, we were running, you know, 4 or 5 days a week leading up to camp. And so I was probably in the best shape I've been in, you know, going into a football season. So that was another positive for me. I think, you know, hopefully that can add on to later in the season.
I felt like sometimes like rehabilitation opened you up to a new, like you didn't know how far you could push yourself.
Yeah.
And you kind of find that and you can actually come back better.
Right.
I think I came back faster after a knee injury in college just because I worked harder. I mean, you never had to work as hard. It kind of opened up a new window.
Yeah, I think there's that sense of urgency of, man, I got to get better today. And so you kind of – and then every day you're pushing your knee to your limit, and then you're like, okay, let's push it to the limit again. And whereas if you're healthy, it's like, let's push it till I feel good, right?
Yeah, right.
I got a good pump. I'm sweating. Let's call that a day. But when you're rehabbing, it's like – nope, I got to go extra because I'm behind, right? I feel like I'm behind. I got to go. You got to do more. And you get that sense of urgency and that work ethic that really kind of pushes you along. So definitely.
Who's a tight end that you watch, that you admire? You like his game?
Oh, shoot, that's a tough question.
Because you're a D lineman until your sophomore, junior year. So you were probably admiring, like, defensive linemen when you were growing up, right?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't hard. I've kind of always said that. We've always had really good talent at UW, and I kind of just try and focus on what's there. But, you know, this past offseason, obviously George Kittle kind of set the standard last season for what he did, and I kind of really respect his game because he's one of those guys that blocks and catches the ball. Everyone loves to celebrate touchdowns and yards and stuff like that. But the guy's a grinder. I mean, he goes out there and blocks hard, and I kind of was just watching his routes and how he gets open, and it was just really kind of real fun film study for me.
How about Jason Witten?
Yeah. I like that guy. Yeah, I always, you know, he's always one of those guys. I mean, you know, he's late in his career. Obviously, he's not running 4.6s, but he gets open, man. I mean, he's just a smart, tough football player, and I think, you know, tight end is not really a position where you need to have all the bells and whistles. I mean, if you know where you're supposed to go and you know how to read coverage, I think anyone can be successful in this league.
How'd you find the time over the winter and spring to take whatever classes you needed to take to get your degree in econ?
Yeah, it kind of just matches up. It's kind of a nice thing about UW. They're on quarter system, so the winter quarter was right after season started. And, I mean, I knew I was going to be here in Seattle rehabbing every day, so I was like, hey, let's try and throw some classes on and get this thing done. You know, mom was really pressuring me to get that thing done. So I just basically would rehab in the morning and then jet over to UW for, you know, two classes. I took evening classes, so it was done around 7, and then would just kind of do that every day until, you know, the quarter was over.
What was it like to go through the ceremony for you?
That was fun. It was fun because, I mean, I kind of got to be a college kid again. I was, you know, hanging out with my buds, you know, the underclassmen that I came really close with. And, you know, they were graduating that year. So, you know, spent the day with them and just celebrated. And just kind of a nice closing to that chapter of UW time at UW. It was unbelievable. A lot of fun friends to celebrate and a lot of cool people I've met around Seattle. And just really special for my family to come out again and celebrate with them.
There are definitely easier majors than econ at the University of
Washington.
There
are? I didn't know.
Yeah, there definitely are. But I guess if you were interested in the easy way, you probably wouldn't have played football as well as studied.
I was interested in the easy way.
Were you?
Yeah, I stopped econ after 2 years. Well, I'm going to the comm boat.
Oh, communications. Yeah, you prepared yourself for this illustrious
That's
career,
right,
however.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. I mean, I think getting a college degree, it is what it is, but I think it's you finished it. You know what I mean? You learned how to, you know, build work ethic, build a network. And, I mean, most of the time, I mean, you cram for your test, I cram for my test. It's just about finding a way to get it done. I think that's what a college degree really represents.
I still regularly have dreams that they've discovered that I didn't finish enough classes I didn't actually graduate. Yes,
yeah.
Constantly, like to this day. Although last night I had a dream that the Seahawks won the Super Bowl.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I like that.
That happened.
I like that.
Yeah. That's compared to earlier this week when I dreamed that John Gruden followed Greg Bell, the reporter from Tacoma, off the podium and put him in a headlock because he didn't like one of the kids. I told Bell that.
Both of those things could probably happen. Just kidding.
What are you eating at night?
What are you smoking at night? Well, it's nothing to do with any of the chemical intake that's happening.
I'll ask you this because I think that's you show up and you're not prepared for a test. You have that dream. Do you ever have the football dreams? I'll have every once in a while, not so much anymore, but I would go to the stadium and I wouldn't have something stupid like my socks. And for some reason that meant I couldn't play or I couldn't find my helmet or I was stuck outside the stadium. Do you ever have those dreams about football?
Well, I do it purposefully. I'm a big, big fan of visualization. I think the mind is super powerful. And so I kind of take it in the other direction. If I'm having a nightmare, let's say I used to do this when I was a kid, when I'm having a nightmare, I'd be like, all right, let's control this narrative. Let's be on the football field where I'm comfortable, where I like to be, and let's go through plays and visualize success and scoring touchdowns. So I kind of turn it, rather than losing my helmet or forgetting my socks, I was like, let's go plant someone. Let's go catch a touchdown. Let's sack, fumble, whatever. I was like, let's just have fun on the field. I would try and change the dream that way. So that's kind of interesting.
Wow, you can control your dreams. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Everyone can. Mine's super powerful. Got to concentrate.
I'll have to
think about that.
Yeah. Because the one thing I did when I was reading Bill Romanowski's autobiography, which is fascinating.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
No.
You read? Yeah.
He did not write.
Yes.
He can't even read.
No, he could definitely read. Or he had somebody write this for him. It was fascinating. But he talked about when he was, because he used to take all those supplements.
Yeah. Yes.
That when you take magnesium, it'll make your dreams super lucid. So for a while, I was taking magnesium simply for that effect.
Cherry juice.
Oh, really?
I'm not even.
Cherry juice. Okay.
Make you have real vivid dreams.
I'm going to try that.
Do you think before you go to sleep, if you think about what you want to dream, that you can actually dream it?
Yeah, I would say yeah.
Seriously.
Okay. You know what? He's the new Luke Wilson.
I'll give it a try. And I have a confession to make to you.
What you got?
I took one econ class at Washington State. And I took it pass-fail. So when you ever take a class pass-fail?
Yeah, well, I wanted to be an engineer, and so I took, chemistry and calculus. So I was like, well, let's pass-fail chemistry.
Yeah.
It was getting too much.
But it was like a foreign language, econ to me. Plus, I didn't go to class very often because I thought, well, geez, it's just a pass-fail. You know, all I got to do is, you know. But I got to the final, and I was thinking, man, if I get an F on this final, I'm going to flunk the class because I hadn't been doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Will, I got to be honest with you, I cheated. I looked, I did one of these, I'd never done it before because I always had some pride, but then I thought, the guy next to me must know this stuff better than I do. So I cheated a little bit and ended up getting a D and I passed the course.
But that's what I'm saying. A college degree is about getting it done. It's about getting it. Now, I'm not endorsing cheating. I'm not. Well, I would not. But it's about getting it done. It's about using your resources and getting it done.
I felt bad, though.
Yeah?
I felt bad, but I thought, oh, man. Okay. Come on, Jim. It's do or die. Let's do it. So. And I got my degree.
Got your degree?
Yeah.
They don't ask you how. They ask you how many.
And last thing I have for you. You're an animal lover, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking at your Twitter timeline, and I think you retweeted some videos about dogs, and then you also had something about the world's population of snow leopards and white rhinos have been increasing, no longer considered endangered species.
Great news.
And so you were excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just stems from where I come from, Montana. I'm a big wilderness guy, so anytime I can see that animals are prospering, especially in endangered animals, I think that's amazing. I'm a dog lover and cat lover. It doesn't matter. I love all animals. So, yeah, I'm definitely trying to spread positivity on the timeline, and people like animals. It makes people happy. So,
you're a cat lover too?
Yeah.
Do you have a cat?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I had to give it to my old roommate, but
I don't discriminate. Cats.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. It's kind of weird.
My wife brought me around to it. And
you
now
go, oh, I have a cat. And they're like, what? You have a cat? But my cat's, it's awesome. Like,
they catch mice. They kill things.
Well, and you can, like, think about it. I have a cat. I can leave it for a weekend, and it'll be alive when I come back. That's super nice.
Yeah.
Do you hunt at all?
I do. My brothers are big hunters. They go bow hunting for elk.
I can't do it.
Can't do it.
Yeah, I was on a golf course over at Alderbrook a couple days ago. I see deer on the course with fawns and everything. I'm like, man, I could just never shoot one of those things.
It's hard. Well, my grandpa was a trapper, and so it was kind of ingrained in our family of, you know, kind of hunting and, you know, feeding our family. We've killed our own turkey for Thanksgiving, so it's purposeful. Obviously, it's a sport. Gets my brothers out and hiking, and we go fishing, and we pretty much eat everything that we kill. So I think it's a sport, but also it's purposeful.
Mm-hmm. Dave, cool. How many cats do you have right now?
Well, I don't have any cats.
How many cats live in your house?
My wife
right?
There's only two.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're down to two?
Yeah.
What were you up to at one point? Five?
Six or seven.
Whoa.
Way over the crazy cat lady
That's
level.
That's extreme.
My wife is very much an animal lover. Like,
I'd like to think that there's now, like, a vacancy outside Wyman's house.
Yeah, all the bum cats come by my house, and my wife feeds them at
there's
night.
There's a cat cafe in Seattle. Just take her there.
Yes,
she can
there
get
is.
Her cat fixed.
Yeah, there you is know? A cat cafe. It's right near where I used to live.
What do you
I
mean?
See, Dante and I were roommates, so I think he kind of rubbed off on me. Dante Pettis, he plays for the Niners. You should see his timeline. It's all cats. So.
All cats?
Really?
But I love it. It's like, who cares? He's doing his thing. And yeah. Positive.
What was your guys' names? What was the name of your guys' cat?
Well, our other roommate had the cat. His name was Nipsey, named after Nipsey Hussle.
Nipsey Hussle?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, pretty fun.
Will, thank you very much for
Thanks
coming
for having back. Me, guys.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
One of the few athletes that asked me questions or asked us questions. We were walking in off of the practice field and he was asking me questions. You know, and usually I think that means something. Wade LeBlanc is the other one. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think who else. Maybe Mike Leake. But, yeah, it just indicates that he doesn't think the whole world revolves around him. And he understands life and is just a normal person. And Will Dissly, man, I had him ninth. Did anybody else have him that high? Did you have him that high?
I had him 11.
11?
I'm sorry, I had him 10.
Yeah.
Jessamine had him 13. Jim had him 19 because he doesn't like Huskies.
Oh, okay. Well, Jim doesn't count on that one. No. But anyway, I just think he having a good tight end in this offense is really going to be helpful because, and I keep going back to Zach Miller and how important he was. Remember that playoff game at Atlanta? We all remember that he got the bottom of his foot shot up. Now, I had my rib shot up. And that was uncomfortable, but can you imagine having
bottom
a
of your foot?
Needle
no.
stuck into the bottom of your foot?
No.
And he had, like, I think double-digit catches in that game. And I think he was, like, the leading receiver. He was there for Russell. And, you know, it's just really important in that play action. you know, that he's able to block and then he's able to run patterns off of that, which, like Jess said, I think it was through like week 5 or 6, he was still the leading pass catcher yardage wise.
It was at least 2 more games that he didn't play and he still was the lead.
Right. So, I mean, and that was something we didn't even expect from him. Expected, hey, he's a great blocker, and he is. And like I said, he was just, his blocking was so good on Chandler Jones in particular, but because they started running the ball against Arizona, and they were getting frustrated, and he was just right down the middle of Chandler Jones, who's one of the better defensive end pass rushers in the league. So, but yeah, also, you know, you get a guy who can block that well, and then he pops up off the ground, and it's play action pass. It's really hard to defend.
8 catches for 142 yards. That was Zach Miller in that playoff game against Atlanta. Will Dissly with a huge breakout first month of the season. How much do we expect from him this year? We'll tell you next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brew Coors Light. All day today, we've been giving you a keyword, a chance to win tickets to the preseason finale a week from today. If you head to 710sports.com/win right now and enter the code word WIN, W-I-N, by the end of our show, you're going to be entered for a chance to win 2 tickets to that game August 29th against the Raiders. Remember, the code word will expire when our show ends. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. And you can get your tickets for a game at CenturyLink Field at Seahawks.com. Before the show, we all participated in an exercise ranking the Seahawks, one the 15 most best football players on the Seahawks. We all had Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, number 1 and number 2 in that order. 3-4 tended to be Tyler Lockett, Dwayne Brown, although it went Dwayne Brown, then Tyler Lockett when the votes were all tabulated. It's after that that it starts to get interesting and you look at it. Jim, you had Ziggy Ansah at number 5, and when I saw it, I was like, you know what? I probably underrated him because I didn't have him in my top 15, and that guy is a pass rusher that they signed. They signed him in large part because they thought, well, we'll trade Frank Clark, we'll get a couple of draft picks in exchange for him, and we'll also get the benefit of being able to add Ziggy Ansah to pick up some of the slack. He was a player that was in a very similar situation to Frank Clark a year ago in which he was playing on a franchise tag. What are we expecting from Ansah this year?
I guess I'm not expecting that much, and it's just because you haven't seen him. You know, it's hard when, and like coaches are the same way. I remember last year asking Pete about Ed Dixon. He's like, I haven't seen him. So I bet you can look at his tape and you know what he's all about. But yeah, Ziggy Ansah, just 2 years ago, he had 12 sacks, 2017. And then last year, in a shortened season for him, only 7 games, he had 4 sacks. I just feel like whatever he gets is going to be like just extra. It'll be gravy. Because I feel like it really needs to come from the guys that they've drafted over the last couple of years. And Barkevious Mingo said yesterday, in his opinion, they have the guys there to do it. And like, I'll say this, like Rasheem Green, he has everything that you need to be a good pass rusher and a good player. Because I've seen him from ground level in the form of Joe Nash and Greg Cragen in Denver and Jacob Green. I mean, he has all of the, but he's got to go do it, you know, and that's the thing when you don't see guys doing it, and especially in the preseason. So, like, in the next couple games, you need to see Rashad Penny go do it because he has what it takes. There's no doubt about it. That's why he had 52 touchdowns in college. And same thing with Rasheem Green. He has it, but it's just not happening right now. So, but I'm much more looking forward to that they get the sacks from Rasheem Green. Jacob Martin, I think, is going to be really important. You know, Barkevious Mingo a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit from the blitzes. You know, when they get Jaron Reed back, if he can get 5 or 6. But, again, you go back to that Moyer stat, which was the 2013 season when they had such an awesome defense. They were number 1 in almost everything except for sacks. I think they were in the top 10 still, but it wasn't some ridiculous number. It was like 42, 43, something like that. And the leading sack getter that year was Michael Bennett. There's a new word for you, getter.
Sack getter.
the leading sack specialist was Michael Bennett with 8.5. So, you know, maybe there's not a double-digit stat sack guy this year.
Yeah, well, maybe there won't be, but yeah, I just I had Ziggy Ansah up there pretty high just based on his history, and I based it on, and I think Jessamyn probably, you know, downgraded some guys because of their injury history, and I'm basing this just on Ansah being healthy, and we'll see about that. I just what do you think, Dave? I mean, how many sacks would be okay with you? Would
for
it
Ziggy?
Like four, no, the whole team. Like 40, is that what you look at?
Yeah.
39 or 40, is that what they had last year?
I went through an average since Pete got here, so 2011. Or maybe I went back. No, you know what? I went back to Bobby and Russell. So it was 2012, just when that defense really started to come together. It was like 39.4 or something like that. So 39, 40 sacks. And they got, what, 43 last year? I know they took one away from Frank Clark, but I don't know if it came off the total. It might have been a team sack or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, they haven't lived and died on that. So, I mean, you can go through and look. What was Bobby Wagner? His best year, I think he had 4.5 sacks.
He might have had five.
Maybe five?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and, you know, last year, Cassius Marsh got 5.5 sacks. And, you know, if Bark Mingo can come up with 3 or 4 or 5 or something like that. So, and then maybe you get a couple of DBs that get him. So, but yeah, Ezekiel Ansah, I just look at him that way, I guess, because I haven't really seen him and because he was injured last year.
The guy that came in sixth on the list on our balloting, you had Russell Wilson 1, Bobby Wagner 2, Dwayne Brown 3, Tyler Lockett 4, Chris Carson was 5, Jaron Reed was 6. Sixth best player, according to our ballots, and we all had him at about the same spot, ranging somewhere between 8 and 11 on the four of our ballots. He's going to miss the first 6 games. Given what we've seen so far, are you more or less concerned about his absence, given the fact that L.J. Collier hasn't practiced since the first week? We still have questions. Ziggy Ansah hasn't played in the preseason. Are you more or less concerned about Jaron Reed's absence, given what you've seen so far?
Well, I guess more. I mean, he's very important, and that is such a blow to the defense that he's made, because his leadership too, you know, and him and Frank, the way they led that defense last year was awesome. And ultimately, Bobby is the leader of that defense. But yeah, they've got Al Woods played really well. I think Earl Mitchell, is it Eric or Earl?
Earl.
Earl Mitchell played well for a while, but I think they found something in Al Woods. And he's an older guy, but he played really well in that game against Minnesota. Jamie Meter, I think, is kind of on the outside looking in, but I thought they addressed pretty well. Al Wood, you just can't move that guy. So they've addressed the run defense, and that's probably as big of a concern, if not more, than the sacks, you know, and then the pressures too. And nowadays, with all this quick passing game going on, and like Barkevious told us yesterday, they couldn't really get to the quarterback in Minnesota, just because, remember all those little outs they kept throwing, these little 5-yard just dunking all the way down the field, and it's hard to get there. But if you can put pressure on the guy, then that's a totally different deal. And by the way, and I think we talked about this yesterday, but when they sent that blitz, and it was like it ended up being a screen. And because of the pressure, and it's a great example, because of the pressure, Kirk Cousins sailed the ball, and it went over the running back's head. But if he'd have caught that, that thing was out the gate. I mean, there was nobody within 15 yards. And so that's sort of the risk that you run with running blitzes. You know, you just don't have as many guys back in coverage.
Yeah, well, when you talk about pressure, though, the one play, too, when Mingo and Marsh had pressure, I think it was on Slaughter at that point, and that's what led to Deshaun Shedd and the pick six, the 88 yards. So, yeah, as long as they can get some pressure and you know, get in the pocket, get in the face of the quarterbacks, and you talk about the run defense, I haven't really, you know, I don't know. I'm sure they're going to miss Jaron Reed, especially with the pass rush, but you got guys like Puna Ford, Jamie Meter, you know, Mitchell and Woods you've talked about. I don't know if Meter is going to make the team or not, but Mitchell and Woods probably will, and I think they seem stouter to me up front against a run.
Well, the rookies are playing from behind. We'll tell you how big a concern the injuries have become in that class. That's next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Sitting there coming up of all the lists, Seattle had a pretty important rookie class. L.J. Collier drafted in the first round, Marquise Blair in the second, then DK Metcalf. They traded up to get in the second round. None of those three guys are currently practicing.
things look good for Cody Barton, who's had, but man, he's backing up Bobby Wagner, so I'm not sure how much we're going to see him in the base defense. Ugo Amadi's looked pretty good, but, well, it's Jamar Taylor, a veteran who's getting a crack at the first-string nickel spot this week. How big an impact are these rookies going to have early in the season, Dave?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think the nickel thing's still pretty open. And maybe we will see JT, who we talked to last week, the veteran, playing, and you know we'll see how he does. But Ugo Amadi looks pretty good. That was nice to see that open field tackle on the punt. That usually leads, and it wasn't just that. It was his escape from the double team. And he just split right through those two guys with a really nice move. So, you know, that kind of indicates what kind of player he is, making tackles in the open field.
Can you tell on that, Dave, when you're coming down there as a gunner like him, on, you know, when the receiver is about to catch the ball by looking at his eyes or anything like that? Because he had perfect timing on that.
I know. And it could have gone one way or the other, right? I mean, he could have, like, entirely whiffed if he was a little bit late, or he could have got there too early. I think he just went as hard as he could, and it just timed up perfectly. It was one of those things that, you know, and it was a good play, but it was one of those things, kind of like the helmet-to-helmet hits, where I say sometimes it's just on accident or it's by happenstance. I mean, he just got lucky there where he timed, you know, I don't know that he was, because he didn't look up for the ball. He was only reading the returner, right? So, but it's an indicator of, like, he can make plays. And same thing with like Akeem King and Nico Thorpe, who somebody correct me, I didn't mention him. He was great on the gunner last year, and Justin Coleman. But for young guys, Blair to me is the one that looked the best because we didn't see him. We see him in the game one, and he made plays all over the place. And then he tried to, especially given what he did last year. I mean, he got kicked out of two games because of the helmet-to-helmet thing. You'd think, oh, you get in the pros, it's even more difficult. And he tried to get his helmet out of the way and almost did it. So on that hit down the middle. So I think he's probably the guy that has the best chance to play a significant amount. But I only say that because, like you said, I don't think Cody Barton's going to get on the field very much. You got three really good linebackers in front of you.
What about Gary Jennings? Yeah. When you're looking at the receivers, I'm looking at the list of the Seahawks rookies and the drafted players. And, I mean, some of these guys, you just look at them. You know, Metcalf now coming off the knee surgery, Blair with the back spasms. Phil Haynes, we haven't seen him either.
Yeah.
And he probably would have factored in the guard from Wake Forest, 124th overall. But I wonder about Gary Jennings because we've seen more from Ursua, who was their last pick, than we have from Jennings in the fourth round.
Yeah. I think they like Jennings. I think they're going to give him a little bit more room than others. He's had good practices, and I think they think that he'll get going once the season starts and be able to improve. Ursua is an interesting one. You know, you guys think he's going to make the team? I mean,
I do. I like him.
I do, too. And I think, you know, he kind of emulates what Doug Baldwin brought. And if he can run those kinds of routes, I would compare Jennings to, like, Golden Tate. That it's going to take him a while, but he'll get there. But for Ursua, I mean, if he could imitate Doug Baldwin, that would be really nice. Because Doug, remember his first game, his rookie year, as a rookie free agent, he had a 55-yard touchdown catch.
It's against his college coach, too.
That's right. Yeah, and I'm sure he loved that. But, you know, it's a long shot, I think, for Ursua. But, you know, like Malik Turner, guys like that have looked really good. So, and then you've got the DK Metcalf thing and Jazz Ferguson. We'll see what happens with him.
Of the three receivers Seattle drafted, going into training camp, I would have said, I think Gary Jennings will have the most catches of those three guys over the course of his rookie season.
Because he had the best college career by far.
Most productive,
right.
On the field the most. I now think it's John Ursua. Well, I think I expect to have the most catches, the most regular season catches of those three rookies that were drafted. I don't have any doubts about DK Metcalf making the team. I guess I wonder if you're going to see Gary Jennings. You would assume that a fourth-round pick makes the roster, but when
it's a fourth-round wide receiver jinx, Danny.
I know that.
What were the other ones?
That makes no sense. Chris Durham and Chris Harper.
Well, maybe it's that your name's Chris.
Yeah, just the guy's named Chris.
His name's Gary, Jim.
There was another one, though, too, wasn't there? Another fourth-rounder?
Fourth-round wide receivers?
Well, what was Darbo, third round?
Jarrow's a third-round pick.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for rookies to get all of the marks on the field and everything. Next time you see Hard Knocks, see their board up there, how they have the field broken down. There's like the split, they call it, and then the end. And if you just like pause it and go and look, it's interesting. And I know it's, and it says know the field. So it's for quarterbacks and receivers and where the landmarks are and what they're talking about when they say, we want you here, not here. And that's the thing, you know, they, in the pros, it's like, no, we want you to make that cut with your left foot, not your right foot. And you don't even think about those things in college. So I think that's the reason why it takes them so long. DK Metcalf was really humble about that. We had him in a production meeting. He was like, man, some of the stuff I've never seen before. You know, where they're rolling coverages as the play starts, they go from two to one while, you know, he's running his route. And it's just hard. It's difficult for those guys to read that. So I think it makes sense that it's going to take longer, but I'm hoping that, you know, like you said, Danny, I'm hoping that Ursua, I feel like he's either going to be Doug Baldwin or he's not going to make the team. And I don't expect him to be as good as Doug Baldwin, but to provide that kind of service, those kinds of routes.
Kevin Norwood's the other fourth rounder.
There you go. Kevin Norwood.
Norwood made the team, right? He hung around for a little while and they traded him for something.
He wasn't good, though.
Yeah, he didn't live up to – I remember watching him at Alabama going, man, this guy's an NFL player, and it just didn't work for him.
You're betraying a guy who also suffered from motion sickness.
I am. Well, but he wasn't good. I mean, yeah, he got sick on planes like me. We had that in common, but he wasn't a good player.
Well, how long was he with the Seahawks for? Was it just 2 years?
Well, you saying you think Kevin Norwood was worth a fourth-round pick based on what he did in his career?
I'm saying that he wasn't a bust.
Well, yeah, he was.
No, a fourth-round pick, you don't expect to be some sort of world beater.
Danny, he had 9 catches in 2014 for 102 yards, and he went to Carolina in 2015, and he had no catches for no yards.
What was he traded for?
I don't know, but he just washed out.
Well, but if they got something back for him, that's usually
Listen, I'm just telling you, and you even admitted that if Gary Jennings doesn't make it, that you'll put credence into my fourth-round jinx on drafting wide receivers, and that John Schneider, if Gary Jennings washes out, he should never draft a wide receiver in the fourth round ever, ever, ever again.
They received an undisclosed conditional draft pick.
Here's the other thing, though, is that this makes me feel like it did when Edwin Diaz was struggling in non-save situations, that I get more adamant about it just because I think Jim's so crazy. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense why it would be problematic to draft a wide receiver in the fourth round. Like, if you draft him in the fifth round, suddenly it's better than if you draft him in the fourth round?
They've proven that.
That's insane! No, I refuse to admit that. That is crazy. That is insane troll logic.
All right, well, get back to me when they get down to the 53-man cut, and we'll see if Jennings is there.
God, I want Gary Jennings to be good so bad now. I want him to be so good. I need it to avoid this, the fate of having to admit Jim was right. That just sounds so painful. Let's bring in the professor. John Clayton joins us next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Time to find out what we've learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Guys!
How are you?
Danny, you have a mischievous look on your face.
Yeah.
A devious little smile.
Yes.
I made him number one just like you did
in
the parking lot today.
Oh!
Jess made me number one.
Really?
I did. Trying to ride up on me on the way out of the Seahawks facility. I don't care how big your truck is. Oh, wow. That didn't help.
Yeah, big truck... It drops turds the size of Jim's trucks.
Your truck does?
Yeah.
I like the Ridgeline, though. It's up to 283,000 miles now.
I'll never catch you. Well, maybe. I'm at 180.
No.
180,000 on my Ford F-150.
There were some moments of uncertainty earlier this month for little Ridgey, though.
Yeah, well, for the first time, I had to get a new starter.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. Got new tires.
Got some new shoes on the Ridgey.
It's ready to roll.
Let me know if it ever breaks down. I can put it in the back of my truck.
Yeah, you probably can.
Yeah. No, I don't have a big monster truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the guys that have the big monster trucks?
Well, we all know what we think about
big stallion, little pony.
They're overcompensating?
Yes.
For their personality.
Uh-huh.
Well, we learned some things today. Let's get out of this one. But starting with a little bit about Joel McHale.
Yeah, he lives in Hollywood, right? He's down in LA.
Los Angeles.
Yeah. Mercer Island High School graduate.
Yes, Dave is from the land of the silver screen.
That's right. It's in Hollywood.
Down there with the Hollywood tours. Lifestyles of the rich and famous. Joel McHale. Talk soup.
What was talk soup? Is that when they go back and What was that about? Would they just show clips, kind of like TMZ or something?
They would debate minestrone versus chicken noodle.
That's
come on,
true.
Let's go talk soup.
My goodness.
You didn't enjoy that?
I don't think there's anybody in the world that could say that or make that joke, and it would be funny.
Except me?
I didn't say that.
Except me.
Except
I pulled
Danny,
it off.
Yes.
I totally pulled it off.
Well, it's just because you think it's funny, and it's not like you think you're funny. It's that you seem to relish in how much it annoys other people, namely me.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate description of my goal there.
Yeah, he's not entertaining himself with his own joke. He's entertaining himself with your known reaction to that joke.
Yeah, and yet you were amused.
Well, I can't help it because he looks at me with this grin like, you know, and I'm just like, he doesn't like, you know, look away like, I'm so cool, I just made a great joke. He knows that it's going to be met with disdain.
What I think of, and this is honestly as close as I can get to the actual inner thought process, is like, that's right, I've just tainted you with my dorkiness. You, big strapping former NFL linebacker, graduate of Stanford University, is sitting next to a corny jerk inside of a studio, and you have no way to escape the stink of poor humor that I've just wiped directly on you. I've sprayed you like a skunk.
Danny is like a skunk.
It was pretty well put right there, James.
Yeah. I'm going to need to take a bath of peanut butter tonight.
He captured that one.
Peanut butter or tomato juice, whatever, to get the stink off of me.
We also learned about the time Danny heckled Evan Longoria.
I was asking Evan about all of that when he was coming up to the plate.
You weren't exactly asking him. You were screaming it at him.
Weed?
In a heckling way.
Did you catch his attention? Did he glare at you?
He never acknowledged.
Of course not.
To do that would be to admit defeat.
But Dave was amused, probably.
I knew he could hear me.
Yeah. I was most amused by Danny's one stupid heckle. Who was the outfielder? Steven something from
Steven
up here?
Steven Sousa from
Sousa.
Everett.
He's from Everett. And so somebody up in the crowds was just like constantly, Steven! Steven! Like he was going to look up there and go, hey, how you doing? And so all of a sudden Danny, being the parrot that he is, just started mocking him and screaming out, Steven.
It was really obnoxious.
It was really funny.
I'm reading now from a news.
I was. Oh, no. That was back in the drinking days.
I don't think I was drunk, though.
You sure about that?
No. I read now from a news story from 2011. Tampa Bay Rays star Evan Longoria probably found it difficult to explain to cops how an AK-47 was among the goods stolen from his rented house during spring training. Imagine how he responded when the cops told him they found his stolen goods, which included a, quote, Rubbermaid-style container, end quote, full of marijuana.
How big do you... I've seen those Rubbermaid containers. I think it's like one of the big ones that you see in a garage that's like about, what, 20 inches by about 15?
Yes.
And maybe about, you know, 12 inches high?
Yeah.
Full of weed.
I don't think it's like the size for a sandwich.
No.
I think it's not like a Tupperware container.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe it was like a garbage can.
We had when I was at Stanford, lived in the Delt house, there was a guy, I won't mention his name, but he was a walk-on receiver on our team, and he was seemingly always stoned. And so went into his room one time, and he had like an old attic space, you know, with like a piece of wood over it. So he just lifted the wood and moved it over and pulled down this huge bag of weed that was like, it was like a garbage sack. And I don't know how many pounds because I'm not that into it, but I mean, it was just so much. And he just pulled it out of the roof and brought it down and just pulled out a little bit of it. And I was like, oh, my God.
What do you think about his hiding place? Because that's what always cracks me up is like, they'll never find it here.
how many lids do you think he had in there, Dave?
Stoner logic is...
anybody call it a lid anymore?
What's a lid?
Nobody does.
I've heard that before. I don't even know what it means. What does the lid mean, Jim?
It was about, I don't know, two or three fingers in a baggie.
In a baggie?
Yeah. A sandwich bag. I think...
Finally, today we
nice
learned...
Nice snort, Jess. You know, that's a badge of honor. When you can get a snort out of Jessamine, you just feel so proud.
You should feel happy about yourself while
I totally do.
Just hang my head. Finally, today we learned about a new endeavor.
My cat will come and jump. Anytime you're laying in bed or on your back, he will come and jump up on top of you, stand on your chest and, like, rub his head against your... He likes my beard.
Aw.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really nice...
Kind of cute.
Awesome. Yeah, he's a cool cat. They're very
affectionate. You should create a competing podcast called Meow.
Yeah. Take on Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you, C-Raj. You want to produce it for me?
Sure.
Meow.
We'll start it
Shut
out that
up,
way.
Shut up, C-Raj.
That's awesome. And then you know what I can do? Every time we interview somebody, I'll say, hey, do you have any cats? Okay, well, I'm just asking because I have a podcast called Meow. You can find it anywhere on Stitcher or wherever you find podcasts.
It's actually Bark.
And then I'll also
the second season
I'll
was released
start talking
yesterday.
About Stanford football. Hey, do you know I went to Stanford? Yeah, Stanford football.
Second season, seven new episodes. You can get it, Stitcher and whatever Wyman was saying there. Yeah, you know, C-Raj, you won on that one. When I said shut up, C-Raj, I just didn't have a good comeback, so congratulations.
Thanks,
that
Jim.
That was a good line.
That was well done.
I like the idea.
Quick. Came out quick.
I think Meow would be great. I would listen to that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would I be the most unlikely host of a show called Meow?
Yes.
In the station, anyway.
And then you would interview other football players who own cats.
Yeah.
Kevin Pierre-Lewis.
Yeah. We know that.
Will Dissly. Sounds like Dante Pettis is pretty into cats as
right.
well.
Yeah.
Talk about that. And then you guys could have a contest. Who gets more downloads?
You know who would be delighted? My wife.
Shannon.
She would love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have her on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds really stupid.
No, I'd listen.
Want to thank Will Dissly for joining us today. Jessamyn McIntyre for putting up with us and keeping us out of the ditch.
I don't know if I kept
not
you out
sure
of it.
But. Happened, but.
Often keeps us out of the ditch far more times. We would be there far more times were she not here to shepherd us back.
Wouldn't say we've been missing the ditch. Yeah.
Curtis Rogers, who landed that zinger on Jim.
He did. He nailed me.
That's it for us.
Bear down.
We will talk to you tomorrow from T-Mobile Field. Dave, travel safe.
Okay.
To Los Angeles. It is Danny, Dave, and more. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Seattle Sports at Night coming up next.